is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and what we just saw on Sunday in a politically torn America that craves escapism was the most exhilarating doubleheader of championship competition in the history of the NFL. Yes, it was. Whether you're screaming about a historically bad officiating decision in New Orleans and that reeked, or marveling at the continuation of the Brady-Belichick dynasty, or celebrating a shocking Super Bowl appearance here in lukewarm L.A., or maybe wondering just what the hell happened to Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, those two conference title games were squeezed for their every frenetic, dramatic drop, both going to overtime, both all-time games. I'm not sure where those NFL doomsayers are today, the liberals and the soccer moms who declared football dead, but this day proved that nothing can grip a sporting nation quite like classic football, despite all the ills and the crises of the last 10 years, and that the NFL's bounce-back season indeed was legitimate. Certainly in 2019, football still has existential issues, but this also has been the season when talk of anthem protests and criminal problems turned to close games, new stars, ageless treasures, and a product feeding deliciously into the new era of legalized gambling. And if you doubt me here, just ask the CEOs of media companies, say Amazon, Facebook, Twitter among them, about how they plan on bidding high for rights in 3 years. Patriots favored slightly in the Super Bowl, but then that's what Vegas said last year. All I know is I can't wait to see what's next in this ongoing theater.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18. You know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
My praise notwithstanding, what a damned shame, right, that the NFC title game was determined by, altogether now, an all-time awful non-call. The Rams and the Patriots are headed to the Super Bowl, an antithetical matchup of Brady, Belichick, survivalist, dinosaur, old school, versus the hotshot 32-year-old coach with his own coaching tree, his nice grooming methods, and the team that moved to L.A. from St. Louis and found the sun. And yet, all America asks is, why can't a $15 billion a year league extend replay reviews to right a horribly errant call that cost the Saints a Super Bowl berth and altered football history when you think about it? Nothing was remotely debatable about this call. Drew Brees threw the football and Tommy Lee Lewis had no chance to catch it, clearly having been waylaid by the Rams' Nickell Robey Coleman before the ball reached him. Two officials standing right there missed two penalties, offensive pass interference and a helmet-to-helmet violation, yet both could have been corrected if the league extended replay to allow reviews on such an egregious error in the final minutes. But for some absurd reason, the NFL has limitations on replay, meaning here in the height of the technological age, the NFL would prefer to let human error decide an outcome in a championship game rather than simply get the call right. Now, granted, the Saints did lose their composure in the second half, gave life to the struggling Rams, who somehow quieted that raucous crowd after looking feeble and just getting a playoff in the first half. I mean, did you see that? They were thoroughly unprepared for the noise, but then they got together and they used a robust defensive presence and the savvy and precision of young gun Jared Goff to make Sean McVay the youngest head coach ever to reach a Super Bowl. I'm still having a hard time believing this game went down this way. Had the controversial call rightfully been ruled a first down, the Saints easily would have drained the clock with 1:45 left and celebrated their first Super Bowl appearance since the post-Katrina victory in 2010. So America focuses on how the Saints were screwed more than how the Rams rallied to win, even without all-pro back Todd Gurley, who was used only sporadically by McVay after he failed to catch an early pass that led to a pick and a field goal. Again, how did they win this game? Make no mistake, the Rams' defense was great in shutting down the New Orleans running game and limiting receiver Michael Thomas to minimal impact, but people are going to focus on the negative here because the call was so hideous, and Saints coach Sean Payton, who did make his own mistakes in this game and lost his cool with Breeze and other players even before that bad call, made damn sure the world knows that his team was robbed and that the NFL's head of officials, Al Riveron, called him immediately after the game and told him that the officials blew the call.
Frustrating, you know, just getting off the phone with the league office. They blew the call, and man, there are a lot of opportunities, though, but that call puts it first and 10. We're on an E3 plays, and it's a game-changing call, and it's where it's at. So it's disappointing. Credit the Rams. They made enough plays, though. They won the game. The kicker made some big kicks. But for a call like that not to be made, man, it's just hard to swallow. It was simple. They blew the call. They said it should never have not been a call. They said not only was it interference, it was helmet to helmet. There were two calls. They couldn't believe it. So that was – no, we spoke initially, then I called to follow up, and first thing Al said when I got on the phone.
Breeze, too, was devastated knowing the call might have cost him at age 40 his last shot in another championship.
Obviously, in a situation like that, where it seemed like everybody in the world saw it, it's tough. Because of this, as a result of this, there will be a lot of talk about potentially reviewing penalties or game-changing type penalties.
Hell, even Roby Coleman couldn't lie. He says he should have been penalized.
I thought it was for a split second, but, you know, Darrell got up. You know, when I got up, he said incomplete. So, you know, I just was like, thank you. Like,
you said for a split second you thought it was going to get called on.
Yeah,
you?
Yeah.
And why was that?
Because I didn't look back at the ball.
Uh-huh.
I didn't play the ball. If I would have played the ball, then it would have been a different story. But since I just went straight to him, and when I seen his hands go up and I hit him, I just heard the crowd go crazy, and I was like, oh, this is a flag. And then I got up, he said incomplete. I was like,
So what do you say?
And then the ref said, like, a low-key was a tip. Like, it was, like, tip. So I was just like, okay, cool. Like,
so what do you say to all those Saints fans who said that flag should have been called? If it was, they could have run out the clock.
Hey, Saints fans, I'm sorry, but it is what it is. You heard what the ref said. The ref said it was incomplete. Respect the call.
But it's also my duty to explain why the Rams did win the game. Goff made all the big throws when he had to, which shocked me, especially when the Rams were having those problems getting plays off in the first half with that crazy New Orleans crowd following Peyton's midweek instructions to start making noise as soon as the Rams' previous offensive play ended, which clearly confused McVay and a frantic Goff. Shouldn't the Rams have been more prepared for that? They knew it was coming, and they looked like a high school team and trying to figure it out. But the thing is, they did figure it out, and they overcame that crisis with defense, led by old man coordinator Wade Phillips back in a Super Bowl. Wade Phillips! That defense shutting down game-breaking receiver Michael Thomas in the running game, and, as I said, quieting those fans. And Greg Zuerlein, he was indeed Greg the Leg, unaffected by the pressure and the noise and kicking those killer field goals, including the 57-yard game winner after Dante Fowler Jr. tipped a pass that forced the pivotal interception. Here was McVay, again I remind you he is 32, saying he had no problem whatsoever with that bad call. Of course he didn't.
It was a bang-bang type play. The one thing I respect about the refs today is they let the guys compete and they let the guys play. I thought Nickell Roby made a nice play. They snapped it on a quick snap and had a little wheel route coming out of the backfield. thought it was a competitive type play, and certainly I'm not going to complain about the way that that was officiated, but I thought it was a competitive play. I thought they let the guys compete and within the framework of the rules, and that's part of what the NFL football is about.
And just as we were losing faith again in Goff, who was called a rookie bust only 2 years ago, he was the one who steered the offense to the comeback victory, meaning he and Tom Brady are part of the largest age gap between opposing starting quarterbacks, 17 years, 72 days on Super Bowl Sunday in the history of the Super Bowl. Damn, the Rams make me feel old. Goff was moved by the moment.
Unbelievable, man. Can't put it into words. The fight we have, being down, I think, what was it, 13-0, 10-0 early, and we come back, our defense play the way they did, to force it to overtime. The defense gets a pick. Greg makes a 57-yarder to win. That was good from about 70.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Unbelievable.
Of course, Marcus Peters had to make a mess afterward, confronting Peyton amid the ongoing trash talk between them. Maybe McVay should just leave Peters home for the Super Bowl. So, in the end, there you have it. The Rams in year three of their return to a much different and more sprawling L.A. than when they left eons ago. Off to the Super Bowl and representing a market where so many transplants go to their own home away from home bars to root for their own teams. And for those who do love the Rams, good luck getting an affordable seat license now in that new Inglewood Palace. The only person outside New England not afflicted with Patriots fatigue is President Donald Trump, who, of course, tweeted out his congratulations to Bob Kraft, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady after reaching the Super Bowl for the, fifth time in 8 years. To put this in perspective, McVay was a high school sophomore when Brady and Belichick won their first Super Bowl together against these very Rams when they were based in St. Louis. But much as we're bogged down by it all, you must respect the way the Patriots won this game in the Kansas City chill while controlling the football more than 43 minutes and minimizing the magical Mahomes as much as a defense possibly can. Yeah, the Patriots did take advantage of Chiefs mistakes, such as the way Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski were allowed to roam free in the final minutes, and the way the Chiefs allowed Sony Michel to run over them. Indeed, the Chiefs lost this game on defense. But the Patriots also thundered back late in regulation when it appeared the Chiefs had the game won, even after Brady was intercepted for a second time, and Belichick was angrily chucking a tablet twice after what appeared to be another bad officiating call. So here he is, Tom Brady, Tom over time, once again at 41, proving his critics wrong once more in what is becoming one of the great longevity stories in sports history. He has leaned on this us against the world mantra that was hard to take seriously, especially when he burst into the locker room last week and reportedly yelled, "I'm the baddest mother bleeper on the planet." I can't believe Brady did that, but that's according to the NFL Network, which is not BuzzFeed, which I will get to later. When asked afterward if he believes all of that, Brady went into that aw shucks mode. He can do that when he shuts everybody up again, as he has been doing since the sixth round of the 2000 NFL draft.
The odds were stacked against us, and it hasn't been that way for us for a while. And it certainly was this year. And, we started off so slow. And like I said, the last four games have been our best games.
You just said the odds were stacked against you. And last week you said that you think you guys suck. Do you really believe that? I mean, it's the playoffs, you've got to the Patriots, you're still Tom Brady. Or is that just something you guys use as motivation?
Yeah.
As for Belichick, this might be his greatest coaching job. Yep. Taking a team that looked flawed in December to another Super Bowl in February. Not that Belichick wants to hear any praise, though he was unusually aglow about his team's complete effort.
I can't, say enough about the effort that our players gave today and the coaching staff. It was really just an awesome job by all of them. Players have worked so hard throughout the course of the season. I thought they certainly showed a lot of mental and physical toughness tonight against a great football team. Chiefs are very well coached. They have a lot of great players. And we expect it to be a 60-minute game. Turned out to be more than that. That's the way it was the last time we played them. And it was obviously a great back-and-forth type of battle in the fourth quarter. Well, throughout the entire game, but particularly in the fourth quarter. A lot of close calls, a lot of key plays. You could probably point to 50 plays that were critical plays in the game. But in the end, we were able to make a few more than the Chiefs, and so that's why we're able to continue our season. So
Mahomes will have more chances, not to mention the first $200 million contract in NFL history. That's a nice cushion. But the future of quarterbacking wasn't ready to supplant the greatest QB of all time, not yet anyway. And how classy of Brady to ask a security guard if he could see Mahomes for a private moment after the game near the Chiefs locker room. Here was the kid trying to deal with it as well as possible.
I mean, it hurts. It hurts everybody. We knew we had the opportunities this game and this season, and we put in the work. But we know that this can be a building block. It could be something that carries us in the future. I mean, right now it's the end, but hopefully it's just the beginning of a long time.
And Andy Reid, this man is destined never to win a championship, failing again in the big moment. I feel bad for him.
Listen, I'm proud of our players for the effort that they gave this year. This was a tough one. This one hurts. As it does with our fans, I know, and I'm proud of our fans. I mean, they were phenomenal today. It's a great community. And this was we're trying to make this a community effort, and came up a little short. So, but this gives us a little bit of what we have looking forward to us in the future, and that's where we'll go after we've got Aiken here. So, and it's a bright future. We've got good players, and we'll get over the hump here, the big hump. So that's this game right here. So. Anyways, with that, my hat's off to the Patriots. They did a great job today, Bill and Tom. That last drive was in overtime. Was a heck of a job on that part.
So my early Super Bowl pick, I'm cringing because I cannot deal with a 12th major sports championship in New England this century. But I've got Patriots 28, Rams 24. You know what was most satisfying about the debut of DeMarcus Cousins? I saw the Warriors having fun again. There was joy, a new dimension, a fresh storyline for a team that had grown bored with themselves, and we were growing bored with them. And the temptation is thick, I realize, to take one sampling of Boogie and seed a fourth NBA title to the Warriors. For now, they add a low post weapon to the offensive explosives they've had for years, a force who will be able to attack the basket inside and hit open three-pointers with nobody double-teaming him for the first time in maybe his career. But I wouldn't succumb to that temptation just yet. We need to see how Cousins' Achilles tendon holds up, whether he'll join in when defense no longer is optional in the postseason, and how he deals with not getting his customary number of shots and the usual playing time. This is a work in progress, as Steph Curry said, but in the big picture, when you look at an Achilles tear that has ended some careers and shortened others, Cousins has come a very long way since the day he was in a wheelchair staring at a sunset. His mobility the other night was better than expected. I was at the game. He threw down that tomahawk dunk early, set up by Durant. And when he was left open on the perimeter by the undermanned and rapidly falling Clippers, Boogie did nail both of those bombs to put the game away. The Warriors bench was celebrating. He looked like one of the guys. Afterward, they doused him with Gatorade. This isn't the easiest acclimation, being Boogie Cousins, big bad Boogie, temperamental loser ever since he got into the league, basically, joining this cast of Hall of Famers or near Hall of Famers, Golden State, and yet he's just one of them at this point. And the acclimation has been pretty damn easy, if you ask me. And once he does improve his conditioning, his footwork, his rhythm, there's no reason he cannot slide right into this juggernaut with his unique brew of scoring, passing, shooting, power rebounding, picking and rolling, spacing. As long as he behaves and he sacrifices, and we've still got a long regular season ahead, it could be Boogie is just the push the Warriors needed to three-peat. Here was Cousins after going for 14, 6, and 3 in 15 minutes.
Like a kid on Christmas. You know, it's been a long journey. You know, I've said it plenty of times. I don't want to keep, you know, going over the same story, but this is probably one of the best days of my life, just being out there on the floor again, playing the game that I love. My teammates were great. They supported me through this entire process. The organization has supported me through this entire process. They made it easy and smooth for me as much as they could. They understood the struggles that I went through on the daily. And like I said, they just made it as smooth and as easy as possible. So, you know, I thank them. And like I said, it's one of the best days of my life.
DeMarcus, can you take us through what your emotions were like after that dunk and then seeing how the bench reacted?
I'm just glad to know I can still dunk. But, nah, it felt good. You know, I never in a million years would have thought that would have been my first basket, you know, playing ball again. But, I liked how it happened, and I wouldn't have changed it. I like that.
And I've never heard an opposing player get a heartfelt standing ovation after fouling out, but such is the road popularity of the Warriors, at least when the Clippers are the opponents, and they can't sell out Staples Center on their own. Surely, Cousins will face better big men, quicker guards, more engaged coaching staffs than he did in his debut, but for a player known as one of the bigger jerks in sports, there's plenty of love coming his way if he and the Warriors keep the party going into mid-June.
How strange was it to kind of be, you know, everything was kind of centered on you tonight. You're getting standing O's when you're walking off after getting fouled out, stuff like that.
Man, probably the fakest love I ever received in my life. I'ma just keep it a bean. I honestly don't see how, you know, guys like Steph and Kay do it on the daily, where it's just cameras around them all day. I don't like it at all. Like, so hopefully this is the last day of this.
Somebody asked me if this was the first NBA team to assemble a starting lineup featuring five All-Stars from the previous season. That answer is no. The 75-76 Boston Celtics did that. But what we're seeing here is historic nonetheless, and all for the bargain price of $5.3 million this season, made possible by that injury. And it forced Cousins to call Warriors GM Bob Myers and ask if he could join the champs. It was not a prank. Just another chapter in the incomparable story of one of sports' most compelling dynasties. You want to start one of these barroom arguments? What has been the better dynasty of this century? Warriors or Patriots? And I'm not counting the Spurs. Sorry. Warriors or Patriots? Which of the two? I would say Warriors, because I'm sick of the Patriots. I'm not sick of the Warriors yet. I could get there, but not yet. I think the Warriors have... Oh, I'm not even getting into it. We'll do this sometime over the next 2 weeks. I'm not doing it today. Tonight, by the way, Golden State should have no problem gaining revenge for a Christmas Day loss against the Lakers, who are dropping like flies with Lonzo Ball out 4 to 6 weeks with an ankle sprain. Is it possible LeBron James, still sidelined with the most daunting injury of his career, has no interest in rejoining this team? I'm not saying he's just going to take the year off, but maybe late in the season. You think he wants to come back to battle for a number 8 seed in the West and the right to get swept by the Warriors? I can't imagine LeBron, after all of those defeats to the Warriors, wanting to step into a 1-versus-8 matchup and get swept. I can't imagine he wants to be part of that scenario. So I would keep watching the LeBron injury closely, because a groin injury can come and go, if you know what I mean. As Major League Baseball continues its labor-obsessive path to self-destruction with the ongoing Bryce Harper-Manny Machado slog, and I'll say that every podcast, by the way, the sport at least has its annual Hall of Fame debate to consider. As usual, the haggling centers around Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and whether younger voters will ignore their permanent PED clouds and push them closer to the 75% required for entry. I say, no, you cannot let Bonds and Clemens in. This has been my annual statement forever. Because the minute you do that, and I don't think you let them in anyway, because they're dirty. They got their dirty, okay? The minute you do that, then you have to let in A-Rod, Palmeiro, McGuire, maybe even Sosa. I would prefer this year to emphasize the greatness of closer Mariano Rivera, who should be the first ever unanimous inductee, and the bittersweet story of Roy Halladay, who should get in on the first ballot and deserves to be inducted regardless of the air crash that took his life. Should Edgar Martinez, a designated hitter, reach the Hall in his 10th and final year of eligibility? Yes, he should. And I would vote for Curt Schilling because I prefer to remember his bloody sock game, his October dominance, and his 3,000-plus strikeouts over his divisive politics and those online flare-ups where he's fighting with the world. But Schilling will not get in. You know why? Because too many voters hold grudges or they don't like his politics, which begs this question. Should sports media members have anything to do with the voting process in matters of Halls of Fame or any other sports honor? No, they should not, because the responsible voters too often are overshadowed in headlines by the idiots and the politicos. Folks, we are here to cover the sports industry, not to be part of the sports industry. And I think my business has lost that distinction along the way. John Coughlin, a two-time U.S. Pairs champion, was only 33 when he committed suicide last Friday. He took his life only a day after the U.S. Center for Safe Sport issued Coughlin a, quote, interim suspension, unquote, for unspecified conduct, followed immediately by U.S. figure skating's, quote, temporary suspension, unquote. Now, I completely understand in these ultra-sensitive times and after the horrific case of Dr. Larry Nassar at Michigan State why victims of abuse, bullying, harassment, and/or sexual misconduct must be protected and why abusers must be punished. But I'd like to know why Coughlin received only an interim suspension from one organization and a temporary suspension from the other. It suggests that those in power were not entirely certain of the particulars in his case, but decided to suspend him anyway while they continued to investigate, in essence, assuming guilt until finding a reason to clear him. Was Coughlin even given due process here? I don't see it. Or is due process no longer permitted in a world where mere allegations constitute a conviction and the person who's on the right side of the politics wins? A day later, Coughlin was dead, this after referring to the allegations as, quote, unfounded, unquote. All I can say is these executives had better explain exactly what interim means or temporary in this case, because if a life was lost over uncertainty in a two-sided legal case, this will be the latest debacle, tragedy, in the troubled U.S. Olympic movement and another reason why corporate America should pause before deciding what happened in a delicate case without having all the facts. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program, and Chris, an exhilarating Sunday of football leaves us with your Los Angeles Rams versus nobody's New England Patriots. I know there are a few people, Trump, you know, people in New England. Hard to believe, Chris, that anything or anybody in LA could become a national rooting interest, but because of Patriots fatigue, the Rams have sort of become America's team here. As somebody who grew up in the area, you watch them leave and then return. What are your emotions right now?
Jay, I'm excited for the Rams. It's been a long time coming for Rams fans. And Goff had a great game. Did exactly what I didn't think would happen, which was play amazing. The disappearance of Todd Gurley's incredible storyline, and C.J. Anderson doing great. excited for the Rams, excited for Sean McVay, Les Snead, the whole bunch there. But it's so sad that there's this cloud of the no call and the Saints, because let's be honest, the Saints should have won that game easily. And it's just incredible that this is the storyline and that the NFL is putting themselves in this position the Monday after the championship game. Meanwhile, the Pats are in there. And, yeah, I think I saw a couple tweets this morning. I think the only people rooting for New England is outside of Boston in New England area is ISIS, terrorist. Donald Trump was one tweet. Hilarious. Rams Pats should be beautiful for the Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta. And ultimately, I think most of the country will be rooting for that young Jared Goff and young Sean McVay against the evil empire.
And, Chris, though the infamous non-call did help the Rams, please try to explain why the NFL doesn't expand replay to include such calls in championship games. If you're going to have replay, this is when you need it the most, right? What is wrong with this league? They almost get it right, but then this wonderful day is ruined by this call.
It makes absolutely no sense why everything isn't reviewable and how somebody doesn't say, you know what, there's about three penalties on that play. Most importantly, the helmet-to-helmet, which the NFL has made such a conscious effort to be so strict. I mean, you look at the second game when barely they didn't even touch Brady, and you got a roughing the passer call, but yet a guy gets hit helmet-to-helmet, also was interfered with. I mean, it's just incredible. And I find it amazing that while the entire world can see a play, the NFL has no mechanism to review that and overturn that call or actually make a call. Really, really unfortunate. And really disgusting, honestly. Leaves a bad taste in your mouth, Jay.
Thanks, Chris. Which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Greg Popovich indicated he isn't sure if he'll return next year to the San Antonio Spurs, perhaps ending a run in which a small market team in South Texas won those five titles. And if you haven't noticed, a particular assistant coach has been sitting right beside Popovich this season. Her name? Becky Hammon. And might she be named the first female coach in the four major pro sports in North America? This would be in line with the Popovich legacy, but I also have to say this. I wonder if Hammon is ready. But before you start, you know, throwing eggs at me, I wonder that about anybody who doesn't have high-level head coaching experience, male or female. To nobody's surprise, former NFL star Greg Hardy was disqualified for an illegal knee in his first UFC fight. This is the same Greg Hardy who was convicted of assault and communicating threats 5 years ago in a case that was expunged from his record when his female accuser didn't appear in court during his appeal. Here was Hardy insisting he meant no harm.
I was aware of the rule as it stands. I was not aware that that was what was going on. You know, I got deep into the fight, was in the moment, was trying to time it, and I mistimed it. You know, and for that to end my day, man, is a hard thing. It's a hard pill to swallow, man, and it's a hard way to go down, especially when I wanted to portray a lot of appreciation and show everybody that I'm here to do it the right way, man. And this is not how I wanted to do things. And you know, I just hope everybody understands this is not who I am, and that is not something that I would do purposely.
Dana White, the thug who runs this operation, signed Hardy to be a UFC bad guy. White got what he wanted, I think, and a trash sport continues down a very low road. Is Nick Saban such a jerk behind the scenes that his assistant coaches cannot wait to flee? Dan Enos, Alabama's new offensive coordinator, didn't even bother to tell Saban he was leaving for the same position at Miami, not exactly an upwardly mobile move, prompting Saban to ask during a staff meeting, where is Dan? And then later he attached an F-bomb to where is Dan. Dan left town, Nick. He didn't tell you. This coaching turnover has been eye-opening through the years at Alabama, and you wonder after watching that 28-point dismantling by Clemson in the national title game if a downturn is about to begin in Tuscaloosa. Everything changes in life. Even Alabama is a college football machine. And by the way, speaking of college football, it's no small hire when Fox Sports, which needs USC and the Pac-12 to be relevant again sometime very soon, hires Urban Meyer as a studio analyst. This means, after one season of Saturday Yucks on the Set that Urban Meyer, in my opinion, will be the next coach at USC. What, you thought he was done? He's just getting started. And the more I listen to Snoop Dogg's play-by-play appearance on a Los Angeles Kings broadcast, the more I think a rapper's cadence fits perfectly with the hockey rhythm. Listen to this.
Dropped it. There it goes. Get your back. Watch your back. There it is, right behind his back. 23 trying to slide in when he ride in. Up against the wall. Kicks it up against the knees. There it is right there. Oh, good. Quick pass to the inside, outside. Quick. Retrieves the puck. Slows it down. Holds it down. Power play not effective. But we still can regroup and get some money. Let's get some money. Come on, eight. Eight, was that Doty?
Oh, yeah.
Doty, Doty, Doty. That's my dog. Let's go. Run the weave. Run the three-man weave. Get there. Get there. Get there. Get there. Get there. Watch your back. Turn it around. Get there. Come on. Good job, Doty. Good pass. Give it back to him. Oh, get there. Come on now. Come on, set him up.
But next time, Snoop, learn the names of the players beyond Jonathan Quick and Drew Doughty. Snoop referred to him as Doty. A Marriott aside here, by the way. One day on ESPN's Around the Horn, Snoop sat down before the show. He was one of the panelists that day. He sees me and he starts giving me crap. He goes, "Who do you think you is?" That's what he said. "Who do you think you is?" I was looking around. "What, you talking to me?" And he goes, "Who do you think you is?" Well, I don't know. I'm the guy who was on that show every day for 8 years when the ratings were soaring to a peak of nearly 1 million viewers a day, and today they're in the tank. You know, that's who I think I is.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
A day rarely passes when I'm not disgusted with the recklessness of the modern-day media. BuzzFeed News, which always has been as dubious as its sophomoric name, disgraced the profession again when it inaccurately reported that President Trump instructed his lawyer, Michael Cohen, to lie in testimony to Congress. And even Trump's most feverish critics must admit to dirty pool here when Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who's investigating possible ties between Trump's presidential campaign and Russia, denied that BuzzFeed story after saying pretty much nothing publicly about his investigation for nearly 20 months. But that BuzzFeed editor is standing by the story, though his site has been wrong many times before, and worse, so-called legacy outlets such as the Washington Post ran with the story gleefully and continued to pump BuzzFeed even after it was shot down in disgrace. No wonder Trump refers to Amazon boss Jeff Bezos, who owns the Post, as Jeff Bozo. When I went to journalism school, we were held to high standards. If we violated those standards, we were fired. These days, outlets such as BuzzFeed or Deadspin or any of these hokey names with hokey people working for them and making no money never acknowledge reckless disregard of the truth, which makes them criminals. I think Trump, if he wanted, could probably sue and win here. I don't care if he's the ultimate public figure. You cannot recklessly disregard the truth. Consider it the latest example of why America does not and should not trust the media. I weep for any college student pondering journalism or what's left of it as a profession. That's our show, and sorry if I went longer than 18 minutes, but did you watch those games? The material was too precious. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.
If I could turn the page in time, then I'd be